Acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 130, Knit the Strip, Thursday, July 28th, 2016. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. The Yarns at Yin Hu podcast has a Facebook page, and it's available on iTunes. Today's episode is a bit of a departure from my normal recordings. Episode 130 will be a travelogue about a recent visit to the Strip District of Pittsburgh to visit with my friend Mary Beth and to take in some of the fiber-related shopping and entertainment that are available in Pittsburgh during the summer. This episode will be conversational, maybe even chatty, and not very carefully edited. So it's the type of thing where you might want to get a nice drink and grab your knitting and just listen to a little bit of storytelling as you work. Mary Beth has recently relocated to the Strip District after living outside of Pittsburgh for some time, and I was curious about visiting because I've been to Pittsburgh only once before. It was for a conference, and so my travels were mainly in the main downtown area and the beautiful convention center that they have there. I went to the church brewery and did a couple other notable Pittsburgh things. Went to the Andy Warhol Museum. But I did not even know about the Strip District at that time, and I certainly didn't do any exploring there. So when I talk about the Strip District, this is my rough estimate, but I believe it's the streets between the David McCullough Bridge, Pittsburgh is filled with bridges, and 27th Street. It's the south and east side of the Allegheny River, right along the river. Originally, the Strip District was the provenance of produce wholesalers, and in the early 1900s, it was really important for produce wholesalers to have access to the railways. And in the 1950s and 60s, there was really a transitional time when produce, since it started to be shipped by truck, didn't necessitate the railways and those distributors, which had been about 70 or more than 70 in 1950s. By the 1970s, there were only about two dozen produce wholesalers down in that Strip District. So the area started to transition again. Now it's a series of industrial buildings that have been retrofitted into pretty posh apartment buildings. There's a lot of shopping. There's new construction. But the whole area still has a very industrial aesthetic to it, which I guess is very Pittsburgh, but it's also very reminiscent of the railroads and the type of lifestyle that was prominent there at one time. So it was a lot of fun to get to know this area and to do a lot of walking. When I visited, it was insanely hot, so I wasn't able to spend as much time out of doors as I would have liked, but we still walked to a lot of the places we wanted to go, and I took a lovely run walk that goes all the way down to The Point, which is, I think it's a national park, The Point in Pittsburgh, with this gorgeous fountain, and you can see the convergence of the three rivers, you can see all the bridges, You can see the stadiums in Pittsburgh, and it's just a really fun place for people to gather. Because of the fountain there, it's a couple degrees cooler than it is everywhere else, and it was really popular place to be one hot evening when I took a walk down there. Mary Beth had an entire itinerary ready for us when I arrived, and looking back on the visit, I can't believe that we fit as many things as we did into such a short period of time. Our first stop was to Smallman Galley for Sunday brunch. Smallman Galley is a chef incubator. There are four chefs who have been invited to cultivate their menus, and they've been given a galley kitchen in the first floor of a rather industrial-looking building. And they put up their slates or their chalkboards with their offerings for the day, and you can peruse all four of their menus before ordering, and then you sit in a communal type of seating gallery to dine. And there are very long tables, so you might be sitting with people you don't know, or a large group may take up an entire table, and then there are bus people busing the tables and, you know, monitoring, I guess, the turnover of guests. There are also two bars that are part of the Smallman Galley. I didn't order anything from either of the bars, but from what I understand, they're also very produce-forward types of cocktails and different inventive types of food. In the Smallman Galley, the four chefs, there were two female chefs and two male chefs. They each have a different kind of approach to food, a different kind of flavor profile. And you can peruse everything and then order different parts of your meal from different purveyors. So you might order a salad from one place and then a main dish. And if you're really going for a full-blown brunch, you might order a dessert-type item from someone else. When you order, you give your cell phone number, and then your cell phone becomes a kind of pager where they alert you. When your food is ready, you go and pick it up and take it to your table. So it's really like a fun, very hip kind of atmosphere. The seating area is just really loud, and everyone is having a great time. We met some people that we didn't know, and the food was absolutely delicious. I had a ricotta tart with some summer vegetables in it. It was amazingly good. There was an article in the local Pittsburgh magazine about this Smallman Gallery, and you could read the background profiles of each of the chefs. And I think sometime in the late fall or winter, there will be four new chefs occupying the galley area. And then the four who are there now, which I think are the original four. I'm not certain about that. But those four, they've had their start. They've been able to try out some of the ideas they have for food. And then they can go on to maybe start their own restaurant or maybe work for a chef in another city. I think it gives them a really good start and a lot of background and certainly publicity for the work that they do for them to continue their career afterwards. It seemed to me as though the patrons of Smallman Galley had developed a culture of providing face-to-face feedback with the chefs after the meal, because I noticed a lot of people stopping by to visit the chef, saying what they ordered, saying how they liked it, thanking the chefs, and there was just a lot of very personal interaction between the chefs and their staff and the customers. In the afternoon, we were hanging around the apartment for quite a while. Mary Beth has an amazing balcony that overlooks the Allegheny River, so it's a fantastic place to sit and knit. I brought along yarn to cast on two new projects. One of those yarns was Riften yarn. Mary Beth and I had attended the Jill Draper open house when we went to Rhinebeck this past year, and we each purchased a cake of Riften yarn. This is a gradient yarn. I believe it's dyed in the wool. So the wool is dyed and then the yarn is spun in these really gentle and subtle gradients. They're named after the seasons. Mine was a collection of pinks, purples, and browns. And Mary Beth had blues, green blues, and gray. It's 600 yards to a cake of Riften, which is a singles yarn that's, I guess, between a sport and a worsted weight. So it's pretty substantial, and it's also a little bit tweedy. So while the colors are transitioning one to another, there are also some flecks of other colors. It's an incredibly beautiful yarn, and Mary Beth had an idea for what we would cast on, which was a pattern by Martina Baim called Rose Candy. And so we kind of compared notes, talked about needle sizes, because Rose Candy is a pattern that's written for fingering weight yarn, and we were going to really push the envelope, trying something different. We were also going to try some color management. So I actually started by breaking off some of the yarn so that I could start with what I feel is the most beautiful part of my colorway of Riften, which is this gorgeous, deep, grapey purple color. So I rolled off some of the yarn and broke it and set that aside so I could work it into my cowl later. And we made pretty significant progress during our trip. I'm still working on the cowl, but we were knitting every chance we had. We were knitting and sitting on the balcony overlooking the river. I also brought some yarn that I had been given by Mary Beth as a gift when she came to the retreat in Washington County, New York this spring. She gave me some sock yarn from the Knitting Goddess, which is in beautiful muted purples and lavenders. And this yarn, I'm not exactly sure of the content of the yarn, because on the label it says 40% Blueface Lester, 20% Wensleydale. And that's only 60%, and I don't know what the rest of it is. I was looking online to see different blends of the Knitting Goddess, and I suspect this is a blend that also has alpaca in it and maybe something else, because I feel that I detect alpaca in the yarn. It's a beautiful, rustic kind of yarn. It's pretty substantial. This is not a thin sock yarn. It's a pretty substantial sock yarn. And I thought that it would be the perfect candidate to cast on my next pair of socks. So I got to witness Mary Beth's Squirrel Swift in action. We wound the yarn for my socks, and then we wound the yarn for some of her projects. And then we spent quite a bit of time just sitting and knitting, chatting, reminiscing, and plotting some adventures for the rest of the trip. On Monday morning, we were up early and walked down to Loom Exquisite Textiles. This is right in the heart of the Strip District, and we were there by the 9 a.m. opening because Loom was having a week-long sale with lots of price reductions on different fabrics and then just assorted things for very low prices. Loom Showroom in the Strip District is kind of a combination of a fabric store and a curiosities shop. There were lots of things that you would recognize as appearing on the shelves of Joann's or something like that. You know, fabric on bolts. Some of it was marked down as low as $2 a yard. But then there was a lot of costuming fabric and antique fabric, vintage stuff, and then just notions and things that have nothing to do with sewing or garment making were also for sale in the shop. And it seemed like they had dug into like the recesses of their storeroom and brought things out to put them on display and put them for sale. Those really bizarre types of finds were the most exciting part of visiting Loom Showroom. We were there at 9. Mary Beth wanted to know, where is the line? We kind of thought there might be a line ready to go in to get first dibs on this sale on Monday morning. But we were just chatting with one other lady who showed up. And then, you know, the doors opened and we went in. We rummaged around for quite a while because some of the best finds were in boxes on the floor. And they came in the form of fabric remnants of anywhere from a yard to 5 yards, and they were individually marked. Most of them were between $2 and $10. My purchases included some yard scraps of beautiful silks in grays and purples, a half yard of cotton laminate, which I plan to use as the lining for a zippered canvas bag. And this allows you to use it as a cosmetic bag. You could also use it as a knitting bag, but I thought using a laminate inside some canvas or denim would be a great idea for some holiday gifts. So that was extremely reduced. I bought some red fabric with this really fun vintage telephone print on it. That was just $2 a yard. One of my favorite finds was a $5 strip of katagami fabric. This is a Japanese indigo dyed textile, and I have an expanse of this fabric that's maybe about 20 inches wide and several yards long. I'm not exactly sure what the original use was for it or what I might do with it, but it just has this really beautiful design. And I think that I will take it to my sheep to shawl class in the fall and ask one of my teachers, Sono, who knows a great deal about Japanese textiles, to see if she can tell me a little bit more about it and what it might have been from or what it might be for, and if she has any ideas about how I could incorporate it into a garment or maybe even something for the home. One of the most fun purchases that I made was a $5 grab bag of just assorted junk. Some of it's junk, some of it's really cool vintage notions. There were some patterns in there, just a whole bunch of really weird and unusual eclectic mix of stuff. So I purchased a $5 grab bag and so did Mary Beth. And when we got back to her place, we just pulled out each of the items in this bag. And some of them, I didn't even know what they were for. So it was kind of an education finding out what all of these things are. I'll post some pictures of our finds and my purchases in the show notes for this episode so that you can see them. I also purchased 3 finials. There was a box of assorted finials for at the ends of upholstery rods. None of them matched. So there weren't matching sets, but these are pretty substantial in size, like maybe 6 inches tall by 3 or 4 inches wide. They're beautiful sculptural pieces, wood. Some of them are painted. I bought an assortment of 3 of them, and I was thinking of making some sort of arrangement with them or maybe screwing them into the wall so that they could become like oversized pegs to hang things. So that was also a really good find. Loom has recently opened a second location in the Morningside neighborhood of Pittsburgh. It's called Loom Showroom. The only thing that the two locations really have in common is that they both sell fabric. In terms of aesthetics, they're as different as can be. Loom Showroom is sleek. It's well lit. There are wide open spaces. Everything is very organized on the shelves. And the styling or decoration is extremely spare. On sale are the most up-to-date offerings of the different textile houses, as well as a pretty good range of some independent label patterns. And they also had mannequins wearing samples of some of those patterns, which I thought was really cool. And in the center is this huge cutting table. Next door to the Loom Showroom is a kind of a workspace with a lot of sewing machines and teaching tables. It's really bright and open and airy. Unfortunately, the person in charge of that section of the store, which I think is a separate entity, was on vacation. So we weren't able to find out quite as much about that, but I think Mary Beth will explore that location because it could be a fun place to take a class. And the gal who was working with us at Loom Showroom said that they were starting a knitting group there. So I think there's really some attention to creating a community around that location. I was not able to resist some fabric printed with beautiful Luna moths. I just bought a little bit of it. I thought it might be a nice front for a top. I've been dreaming up all of these ideas for this self-drafted tank top that I came up with, which has a printed fabric on the front and then something very plain on the back. And I think this Luna moth fabric would be perfect. And then I also bought the grain line studio pattern for the Willow tank and dress. Even though I've self-drafted a tank top that is really comfortable and I like a lot, I was curious about the idea of turning that into a dress. And I like the detail at the waistline in this Willow dress. I also thought that the Willow dress would be a perfect candidate for my silk fabric scraps because I didn't have enough of one color to make an entire dress, but I think I might have enough to make the top in a gray and then the bottom in a deep purple color. And I think that would be a really pretty dress. So I also purchased the Willow tank and dress pattern. In addition to all of that fabric shopping, I also got to visit the farmer's market. We went to Union Pig and Chicken to pick up some takeout for later that evening. And I also had breakfast one morning at the famous Pamela's. So there was a lot of visiting and getting to know the Strip District. On the final day of my stay in Pittsburgh, Mary Beth and I visited the Society for Contemporary Craft. There's an exhibit there that runs until August 21st called Fiber Art International. It's the 2016 version of a triennial juried exhibition of fiber arts. And the purpose of this exhibit is to celebrate established and emerging artists from the United States, but also from all over the world. This exhibit sees itself as a benchmark for what is going on in fiber art all around the world. And I thought it would be interesting to read to you some of the introduction to this exhibition so that you could get an idea of the range and the breadth of pieces that are visible in this exhibit. Fiber Art International highlights innovative work rooted in traditional fiber materials, structure, processes, and history, as well as art, which explores unexpected relationships between fiber and other creative disciplines. But what is fiber art? Defined as artwork that is made of flexible, linear materials and or constructed using textile techniques such as stitching, weaving, dyeing, and embroidering, Fiber art may be two- or three-dimensional, and the materials used may be natural or man-made. The featured artists in this exhibition have employed an astonishing variety of techniques and materials, often in a single work. Materials range from wool, linen, silk, and paper to hosiery, stainless steel, electric cords, and false teeth. Visiting this exhibition was really one of the highlights of the trip because there was so much inspiration in this room. There were just such a range of materials that artists were working with and such a variety of techniques. One of the themes that I saw in this exhibit was a series of really large portraits in the form of quilts. And the quilting techniques varied. It wasn't just traditional quilting techniques. And the materials varied, but there were quite a few large format portraits. To me, these artists were relying on some inspiration from Chuck Close, I thought. Even though there was no mention of that in the exhibit, that's what I was thinking as I was viewing some of them. But the materials they used were so interesting. One that was my favorite was a portrait of a veteran, and it was done with cotton gauze, the type you might apply as a bandage over a wound. And it was layered in such a way that you could see gradations of light over a black background. So the fiber artist was using these textiles, but imitating something that you might do with pencils on paper to shade, or maybe a more fitting analogy would be if you're using chalk on black paper. And if you make a very thick chalk mark, that's going to be white. And then if you shade it, that's going to be gradations of gray. But this artist was using this cotton gauze in place of the chalk. And there was such depth that the portrait really became haunting. And there was a point at which you could establish a distance from the portrait on the wall that would make it almost like a photograph, like a black and white photograph. And then when you got closer, it got pixelated. And then if you stepped further away, it almost seemed blurry. So that was one that really struck me. There was an amazing stitched quilt with just very small pieces of fabric scraps that made this color burst kind of effect. I don't think it was incredibly interesting in terms of technique, but the visual power behind it was really amazing. There were also quite a few pieces that had a political message to them. One was a piece, a sculpture on the floor that looked like it was imitating some fluffy sea foam floating on the ocean. And the sculpture was made of plastic bottle caps that had been stitched together. There was also a piece that drew attention to the topic of female genital mutilation. And there was a quilt that was done with photographs, old photographs that had been reprinted on fabric. And the subject of these photographs were Japanese Americans from internment camps. There was also text on the quilt, and it was really beautiful. And the images were repeated, but in such a way that it took you a while to realize that the images were repeated. Overall, this exhibition was informative, visually appealing, and just a lot of fun to visit. One thing that we weren't able to take advantage of, but I found fascinating, was that in conjunction with this exhibition all spring, there had been a series of workshops taught by some of the artists featured in this exhibition. And there were, you know, some were geared toward people who already had a skill level in the technique, and others were just for anyone. Absolute beginners could attend. And the workshops were facilitated right there in that building in the Strip District. So I would definitely make time in my schedule to visit this exhibit again. It's a triennial, so I'm thinking that means it's every 3 years, not three times a year. But I would definitely like to explore a future exhibition and maybe take some of the workshops affiliated with it. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this brief summertime excursion to Pittsburgh's Strip District. I certainly had an enjoyable time visiting Mary Beth and Tony, her husband. They were such excellent hosts. I ate so well, slept so well, and had such a good time exploring Pittsburgh that I look forward to my next visit there.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, flowery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Leaves her down like a lady, waiting for a naked man. River bends like an elbow, turning stones to sand. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire. Just like Linda Curtis, a bird out on a wire. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed today's episode, I hope you will consider joining the Yarns at Yinhu group on Ravelry, leaving a star rating or a review on iTunes, or following me on social media. Music for today's episode is Sweet, music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Krista Long and Cesar Diaz. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature.